Okay, Vanna, what is the earliest event in your life that you can remember?
Well, I guess it must have been when I was about three or four years old. My grandmothers had died, and they didn't have mortuaries then, and so I begged to go in the parlor to keep looking at her. I guess that was about the first thing I can remember.
That's interesting.
Do you want me to go further into childhood? That's
whatever you want to do.
Well, I remember having my tonsils out when I was 8 years old. Dr. Beale did it. And then I walked over to my grandmother Johnson's from my mother's dad's place, about four blocks, and she fed me soda crackers and apricot pie, and it didn't even hurt that I remember. And that's about it.
How did your parents choose your name?
Oh, well, Mom had read a book. It was either a heroine in the book named Vanna Hastings, or it was about a girl named Vanna Hastings, and that's how it came about. And I'm not really sure which one it was. She could tell me if she were here. And that was about it.
Where did you grow up?
Up in Smoot at the foothills, about 2.5 miles west of Smoot. Couldn't have grown up in a better place.
How did you travel or go places in those days?
Well, there was a big, long building in Smoot that housed, I guess, the bus, but it was plenty roomy, because about the first snowfall, Daddy would take the car out and park it in there, and then they rode back and forth from there to home in a sleigh, you know, in the wintertime. And then they'd go to town and get their supplies and come back and transfer back into the sleigh. They always had a sleigh box and full of hay for the horses, just tie them there for the day or however long they were gone. And I guess the worst thing about traveling with the horse was in the spring when they were shedding their winter coats. And we were warm, but we sat on a bundle of hay and had blankets or quilts around us. But when we got to Smoot, we looked just like a horse. We were just covered with the sheddings, and it was terrible. In your face and all over the top of it. I guess that was about it for traveling in the winter. We didn't need a driver's license then when we were kids. And I remember my best friend was Ruth Bruce, and they lived up on the highway for south of Smoot. Her brother, Dean, had fixed up an old Nash car that would go. I think it was a Nash. It didn't have good seats, so we just had a board across the back. And we'd go down the highway in that thing, and he'd drive. It's funny we didn't fall off, but we didn't have any accidents, so probably didn't go very fast.
What are the names of your mother and father?
Well, my mom's name was Cora Minerva Levitt Johnson, and Daddy's was Orson Albert Johnson. Straight Swede. He was. Mother had a little French and English in her.
Where were they born and raised?
Well, right here in Afton, where they were raised. Daddy was born in 1894, and Mother 1901. So,
what did they do for a living?
Well, he was a farmer. I guess most people were. Just had a farm, and we milked cows, and Mother raised chickens to supplement the milk check. And she always had chickens. Some chickens and chickens.
What were they like? What was your father and your mother like?
Mother was sort of a stay-at-home lady, but Daddy was outgoing, and he did lots of temple work. I had a glass out there just stuffed full of names that he had done before they started giving them back or keeping them, you know. Mother go once in a while, but she was more of a homebody. But she was a dang good cook. I remember my father had told Grandma Johnson, his mother, that Mother's rice pudding was better than hers. So she came up one day, Grandma did, and said, "Orson says your rice pudding's better than mine." So Mother made her a rice pudding, and she had to agree that it was better. She cooked it in the oven, you know, from start to finish. And it was nice.
Do you remember anything else about your grandparents? Where were they born and raised?
Well, in Sweden. They both were in Sweden. And they joined the church over there, but they neither one knew each other. But it was funny because they were born in about the same place. But then they came to America when they were about 18 or 19. Mm-hmm. And Grandpa went to Midvale, Utah, and he worked in the smelters. And Grandma was working for the man who run the smelters. And one day he said, "Annie, I know a fellow that would make you a good husband." So through him, they got to know each other. And his mother had, my great-grandmother had come to America. They made sure they were on a boat that had LDS missionaries because they felt that they would be safe. They wouldn't have any sinking or anything. And so that's where that started. And then they came to Star Valley, and Grandpa had saved $2,000 in a little jockey box on the wagon he was driving. And I don't know whether he had any stock rather than the team or not. And then they bought the place. They settled on the the place up here in Smoot. I don't know for sure. I'm not sure there. But they lived in Afton, where Leon Merritt lives. Is it Merritt? No.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. That's where they lived. And then maybe they moved to Smoot later up there, and they bought that from some, I think they were old bachelors, their names were Andersons or something like that. So they raised all the family up there in Smoot. And one day, my grandfather, it must have been a moonlight night, he came in the house and said, "There's some teams headed this way from Smoot." and he wondered where they were going. Well, they ended up at Grandpa's, and they had a party, my father said, a surprise party on them. And during the course of the evening, Charlie Gomm, who's Mary Hoops's great-grandfather, I guess, or grandfather, I don't know which, he said, "All right, Charlie," my grandfather's name was Charlie, too, "All right, Charlie, if you'll do the whistling, I'll do the singing." And Dad said it sounded mighty good to him. And I guess that's about all I can remember. I remember being in town to their house, and my Aunt Irene and Aunt Elva were both teaching school in the valley, and seemed like they were always on diets. There's always eating cornflakes without any sugar in or something. And Grandpa, he never gave Grandma any money to spend, you know. But in her pantry, it was a long, dark place, and she had the counter covered with oil cloth. So when he'd go to bed or something, she'd go through his pockets and take all the change out and put under this oil cloth. And that's where she got her pin money, or pin money, whatever you called it. And if us kids got too rowdy, I've got the clock in there. It had a long pendulum, so she'd have them sit down right quiet and watch that pendulum swing back and forth. And pretty soon they were asleep. It put them to sleep. And I remember my cousins telling about that. So, my grandfather died just right about the day after Christmas. And then my grandmother died in May, up at Uncle Charlie's home right there in Afton. And I'm not sure who lives in that home now. I was thinking it was some swaps like Art, but I'm not sure. But it's still there. Anyway, that's about what I remember my grandparents.
Okay, what are the names of your brothers and sisters in order? Start with the oldest.
I'm the oldest, then L.A. His name is Lauren A., so they just shortened it, called him L.A. all his life. And then Sherma. You want their... Okay, and then Rayona. And Ella Ann and Marie.
How did you feel when you had a new baby brother or sister come into your home?
Oh, boy. When Sherma came, she was born up to the ranch. And my aunt, I don't know which one, came to stay with mother. You know, they stayed in bed 10 days when your babies were born then. And I had a doll buggy. And Sherma only weighed a little over 5 pounds with all her clothes on. And my aunt showed me how she just fit in that buggy. And then I wanted to wheel her around all the time. And mother said, I must have been a miserable kid. She said, and then when they wouldn't let me, why, I laid under her bed and kicked and squealed. So that was terrible.
And what other experiences do you recall having with your brothers and sisters, maybe when you're older?
Well, we were always helping with the chores. And we housed our cows, our milk cows, in the big old barn. It was a horse barn, really. And one day, I happened to get my cows milked a little sooner than my brother. So he complained to Dad that my cows weren't milked dry. So instead of him saying so to the cows or letting them know he was there. He just run up to them to grab at their udders to show Daddy that there's still milk in there. And she kicked him clear over under the other cow because it was all open. It didn't hurt him, but it just frightened him really bad. And then we used to go down to Uncle Reuben's just below us, and we in that little pasture, we'd have a bonfire and we'd play relieval or some game outside, and it was dark except for the bonfire. And then Pearl would make honey candy, and we ate a lot of honey candy, taffy, honey cat taffy. And I guess that was about it for that. On Christmas, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, all of us children were taken to the church by our folks, and we would dance around. It was just one big hall, you know. And we'd dance around there. We'd get a partner and cross our hands and hold on to each other, and we'd skip around that hall as long as Rula Crook would play A Riggedy Jig in the Way We Go. About wore out. That was a fun time.
Mm-hmm. What other fun things did you do with your brothers and sisters, or just any time?
Well, I can't remember anymore about that at that time. I remember the tree, though. The Christmas tree. Oh, Mama had it so nice. And she was always the one that made sure that Santa Claus kept his date with us. She had little wax candles clipped, you know, but they didn't dare leave on very long because it would ignite the tree. But that was the prettiest. Mm-hmm. They still haven't made a tree like those. Them days.
Did your anybody ever have nicknames for you? Did your folks call you any nicknames? Or
no.
Your...
No, I didn't get my nickname till I started high school.
What was it then?
Blondie.
Oh.
You remember Dagwood and Blondie? I don't think I looked like Blondie. But my hair was really, really blonde. And that's where I got that. And I guess it carried clear through high school, as far as I know. I read back in my old little things that when people signed my book, and it was Blondie. And later, Dick named one of his horses Blonde. So it got, I got to be her, what would you call it, namesake or something.
What chores did you do at home? What did your parents have you do?
Well, besides milking the cows, my dad started us out about 5 or 7 years old right there. We each had so many cows to milk. And Mother had a beautiful garden across a flume. Now, if you don't know what a flume is, they had we had a deep ravine right there, and we had a water wheel with triangle cups on it. It must have stood 8 feet tall. And as the water came over from the other side, it hit those cups and turned the wheel. And Daddy would sit down there on a stool and sharpen his hay knives on a big whetstone. And if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't know it, you know. And the flume was maybe 24 feet wide from the ravine over to this, to the house side. And then we had little slats on that, and you could walk across it. And it was full of water. Then it watered the little 7 acres down below the lot of the house. And as you go in across, you had to port the branches, and you wouldn't even know it was there. You didn't know it. And one day my brother was hurrying across there. He wasn't very old. And he slipped and fell down in the mud. But Dad was down there sharpening the knife, so he saved his life. I don't suppose it was too bad, but he looked pretty bad.
So you took care of the garden, you milked the cows?
Oh, yes, and Mother, she would, soon as breakfast was over, she'd go across the flume to tend that garden, and it was beautiful. And my job was to do the breakfast dishes, wipe off the floor if it needed, and so that got to be pretty, quite a humdrum chore. So my cousin in Auburn, Uncle Art's Elma, we'd call each other when we got through with our chores to see who could beat each other getting this done, because she had to do about the same. And that was one thing that took the humdrum out of the doing the dishes.
So you had telephones?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, we did. I guess when Mother and Dad moved up there, Uncle Harry and Uncle Charlie, no, Uncle Harry and Uncle Reuben and Mother and Dad was all lived in that big old yellow house. And the telephone was in my dad's part. So everybody that needed to use the telephone would come in there to use it, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know whether I put this in or not, but my Aunt Sadie, my dad's sister, she lost her husband in a snowslide, and she had two little girls. And so, in later years, then she married a Bagley, and she had two more boys, Leland, who we called Dick, and Elmo. Anyhow, the poor little guys were just passed around from one family to another, because Aunt Sadie couldn't take them to Salt Lake. She's a dressmaker. But she took the two girls, and the boys were left home with Grandma and Grandpa. And so at that time, the guys were smoking Prince Albert in a can. And so these little kids were just like Cats and Jammer kids. You remember those storybooks? Well, they were always getting into trouble. And I think it's because nobody sat down and loved them and tried to make life a little better for them. They just tolerated them. Anyway, they'd call up Brother Peterson, and I always figured that he should have known better anyway. And they'd act like and said they wanted some tobacco. Well, I don't know whether, now I can't remember, but anyway, one of the haymen had lost their sack, had it in a sack. And so the kids were down there on the lawn, and one had a straw hat on. And the little thing that cinched up the sack was hanging out a hole in the straw hat. So they just knew where the tobacco was. They just lifted the hat, and there it was. Oh, dear. I don't know whether I would tell all this or not, Carly. Are you going to edit this?
What, other than that one story you told us about Christmas, do you remember anything else about Christmas? Just about the tree and the home down to the church.
We didn't get a lot of toys. I wanted a cedar chest one year, and it was just a little one, maybe 2 feet by a foot, imagine like that. Mm-hmm. And I just gave it away to a great-granddaughter. It was so cute. It had a little lock on it in the shape of a heart. And then a doll, or a little red chair. And we had stockings, but they weren't the fancy ones that our kids get today. They were what we wore to school. They were washed and long brown stockings. And Daddy would go up to Charlie Peterson, and he always bought some real chocolates, I thought they were. It was about an inch and a half tall with dark chocolate on and a white center. And I can still smell them today. Oh, they were nice. But he usually managed to get an orange, and that went in first, clear to the top. And Mother would make marshmallows. And I can still see on the old cupboard that stood in the corner 2-quart jars of marshmallows. And she made red and green ones. And I'm not sure she made white, just plain white or not. But then she'd roll them in browned coconut that she had toasted. And my, they were as good as any candy. And Daddy just bought the hardtack and those chocolates. You know, he, Mother was the one, though, that saw the Christmas. And so that's the way it went. I can't remember if L.A. had any guns, or I remember getting a sleigh once. And we went to school on the banks of Swift. Is it not Swift Creek? Is up to Smoot. What was that name? Salt River.
Cottonwood.
Cottonwood. Yeah. And we had a schoolhouse right there. And if we didn't have a sleigh to take, we took a piece of cardboard or an old cardboard box. And that used pretty good to slide down that ravine off of that, you know. So, I guess we made our own fun. We didn't.
How did you celebrate your birthdays?
I don't ever remember having a birthday party. I don't. I don't remember that. If we did, it was probably just within the family, you know. But Mother was a real good cook. She was. So I'm sure we had a cake, at least.
Did you have any other special family traditions?
I don't even think we knew what a tradition was. I don't. They talk about it now, and I don't think I had any, really. Mm-hmm. Only putting the tree up on Christmas Eve, and then making chains and stuff for the tree to go on, threading popcorn and cranberries. And one year here, I took all my little grandkids' pictures, and I crocheted a frame for them and hung them on the tree. And then they'd go around and pick themselves out. Oh, there I am, you know. And they could always get a tree, and then he'd put it in a block of salt. And we'd drape the bottom up to cover the salt. And the tree was something to behold. It always kind of crooked. I remember writing in my diary, I made another little crooked tree happy this year by camouflaging her, what do you call it, her defects or something.
When were you baptized? What was that like?
It was in August. I was 8 in February, and I wasn't baptized till August. Well, one day after dinner, the haymen had all had their dinner, and we had this big old fellow, a Mr. Walton, that came early every spring to help Dad get all the machinery ready for cropping and haying. And he was a big joke. He was a big man. And he was always joking with us. So Daddy had asked him to do my baptism. And I made such a fuss over it that Daddy got the Book of Mormon out, memorized the prayer. We walked down the road to the canal, and Mr. Walton and Mother was the witnesses, and I was baptized right there. It wasn't anything fancy. We didn't have an interview from the bishop, anything. And so that's the way it went. And Irene, years later, was baptized in the same... she wasn't. I have to strike that off.
Did you like school?
Yes, I did.
How did you do in school?
Well, I guess I was average. I don't think I had any smarts in me, but I was average. I figured I was a good speller. until now. Now I use the dictionary. But I remember when we was going to school at the Pink House, that was what it was called over by that, where we coasted. And I was a fifth grader, I think. And we had Mrs. Ames, Ethel B. Ames. And the word was treasure. And you know, I couldn't get that to form. And I was just so sad I didn't get 100% because those letters would not come right. So I didn't get 100%.
Who was your favorite teacher?
Well, if I had to put them all together, they were all really good. But I think maybe Andy Anderson, Willard Anderson, if I had to make a choice. And Mrs. Ames was one. Well, they were all wonderful. He taught us all about the music. He taught us, he had us go to the drugstore. He made a deal with the druggist to get in a lot of harmonicas, mouth organs. And so he taught us about the staffs, the cleft and the bass, and all the notes and where they went. And I can still remember how to find a key. You know, if it was one sharp, it was, boy, I hope I know now. I was brushing on it the other day and I still remembered. One of them said, we start with where the first flat or sharp was and said, Ti, La, Sol, Fa, Mi, Re, Do. And that was the key of one flat or sharp. And the other was Fa, Mi, Re, Do. And I think that was a flat. So it comes out just like that. The last sharp or flat you put on there, that's what you count down on the spaces and the lines, and you'll get the right key to whatever they are. I wished I'd had learned. They didn't teach them in the cards.
Yeah.
But Mr. Anderson, he loved Wyoming so much. That's where we learned all about Wyoming. The flower, the bison, and the tree, which was these big tall ones,
cottonwood.
And then I just put the song in here. And later I found it. And he would take a blank piece of paper with all the counties and county seats we had to fill in. And that was something. We did it. I had trouble with my reading problems, you know, and I wish now I had a book of them so I could go back over, you know, if there's two or three steps in them. It was a little hard for me that. So, but we had good teachers. But Mr. Anderson, I just have to say, he taught us so much about music. And then he went another step further. He went to the Mutual, and for every opening exercise for a long time, two of us had to go play a duet on the harmonicas. So we'd had a good time.
Yeah.
he was a good guy.
Did you have any unusual or exciting adventures when you were a child? Did you ever fall in the ditch or anything?
No, I don't remember. Only, not. See, would I be a child if I was 13 or so or 14?
No, that comes under teen.
Oh, I'm probably rushing them all together, Carly.
We'll go there now. Now, when you were a teenager, where did you live? The same place.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your favorite activity?
I guess just going to dances. Sometimes we'd play a ball game in the old bat, straight bar to do for a bath.
Yeah.
You know, and I can remember saying, a tick and a catch is out. You're out. Remember that? And my cousin Pearl, she was a regular ball player. She could hit that and knock it further than anybody with just a plain piece of board. She had some of her dad in him. Him and Eld Erickson was kind of competition.
And what was school like when you were a teenager?
Well, I liked it. I did. I liked all the classes. I took algebra under Ivan Call, and I got an A-. Elva Anderson from Grover got the A. But geometry, I didn't do quite so that bad. Good. I didn't set up right in front of the teacher. I had a little seat a little further back. There must have been some hanky-panky going on. But then I took world history. I liked history. And I liked type. And I liked English. I had a really good teacher in English. And so when we had the, I guess it was homecoming, I'm not sure. She dressed me up in one of her formals. And I was Miss Liberty or something. I don't know what it was. Or the teacher, because there was a boy sitting on a desk with a desk. And I was up in front. Anyhow, can't remember what I was. But she kind of took to me, and her name was Julia Kurtz, and she was a sweetheart. She was nice. And we took homemaking and made us some shorts. Well, it was all one piece. I don't know what you call that. And I remember making that. We had a Miss Romney as our teacher. I remember her so well because she had a long mirror right on the wall next to her dress desk, and I could see her primping as she looked in this mirror. And she was Brother Romney's, in the General Authority's, niece. So it's not the one that's over in Michigan now. It's in the world was his name. I don't know. Anyway, she's his niece.
What books did you like to read? What were some of your favorite books?
Well, I think, I don't remember if we were, there must have been some that we were required to read in English, but I don't know, Carlene. I think we all read The Scarlet Letter. I think that was one, but that's the only one that comes to mind. But the diagramming of sentences was something else. We just have that all one sentence all over your page for adverbs and adjectives and nouns and verbs and little diagrams, you know. And that was a challenge, too. Because sometimes you wonder if it was an adverb or a verb. But an adverb usually had an L-Y on it or something, you know. Oh, dear.
did you have any favorite radio programs that you listened to?
Oh, yeah. As soon as we got home from school, we had several. And I'm not sure now if they came on before milking time or afterwards, but we had Inner Sanctum, and that was a squeaky door, and Fibber McGee and Molly and Amos and Andy and Little Arf and Annie. And later we had Ellen Trent and all of them. But, yeah, we liked them. And then the radio, Daddy had a Philco, and it was wonderful. Now I can't use the radio because there's so much static most of the time. So they must have been grounded some way. But the Philco. And my sister, when Mama died, she took the old Philco home with her. My youngest sister, she wanted that old Philco. I don't know whether she still got it or not.
What was the music like then for teenage music, your popular music? What did you dance to and what did you like?
That was the best. That was the best. We had, well, the one that was the most fun was the Bear Bear Polka. You know, and I've learned to play that. I got a book in here a little bit. I can play that. And that was the fun one. And I don't know whether we did the bunny hop then. We must have done. But I can remember dancing around the floor, hopping. Just hold of each other, just a skipping and a hopping around that big valley on the floor. But we had a good orchestra. They were all homegrown. And they lived here, you know. We had Ron Allred on the piano. We had, Torbison on the cornet. And Holdaway, our high school principal, on the
trombone.
Saxophone. And we had the trombone. Is that the one that slides in and out? That was the druggist. His name. I got them all written down. But you know, they played decent music. It wasn't one phrase over and over and over. It told a story like harbor lights. And you know, it told a story that harbor lights says something about you were on the shore and I was on the ship. They told a story, you know, like Ramona and Goodnight Sweetheart, and I can't remember all of them, but they told a story in the song. It wasn't just one phrase that was repeated over 40 times.
So you went to school dances?
That's about only place we had to go for entertainment.
And church dances.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't think we even had it was segregated then. We just had high school dances.
Yeah.
And if we got to go to Thane, it was 15 miles away and we thought we'd been to Salt Lake. It was so far, you know. It was a long ways. Oh, dear.
Did you have any responsibilities in your home, like helping out in your home, helping your mother, anything?
Only what I've said.
Yeah.
You know, about the school, when you asked me about school, my main room in our home was log, and the other rooms were built on to it as needed. Well, from the log home, and it had been varnished so many times within that doorway. It must have been 18 inches wide. And Mother never got after me. I'd have my siblings sitting down here, and I'd have a piece of chalk, and I'd write 2 + 2 on this wood, and it showed up really good. That's what I did. I should have went to school and been a school teacher like my dad wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Me too, for a few years, but I didn't. So.
Who were your friends when you were a teenager?
Okay, my best friend, we got together about the second grade, was Ruth Bruce. And we remained friends clear through great grandmahood. Almost. Yeah. But the other kids was really close. There was only three boys in our class. And the rest were girls. There was about 6 of them. Should I name them?
Sure.
Let's see. There was Ruth and I. Then there were Shirley Canning, Lila Maud Waring, and Sybil Weaver, and Jean Pringle, and maybe that was it for the girls. And Del Swab, Lyman Bruce, and Spencer Taggart was the boys. And so We put on little shows, and I can't remember. My cousin and Ruth was in one show, Raspberry Red or something it was called. And that was really cute. I think I was the snake charmer in that or something. Oh, dear. When we were tiny, we went to that big church, and it was roomed off in big, heavy curtains. And when we were about five or younger, we had the roomed off room by the big old heater. And I remember the little song we'd sing. However many there were, we sang. If there were 10, we'd sing, "Chickadee, chickadee, fly away. Chickadee, chickadee, happy and gay. 10 little chickadees sitting on the fence. One flew away, and then there were 9. And we'd fly to the other end of the room." I'm getting it all mixed up for you,
Carly. Okay. That's okay. That's fine. What religious faith did you belong to?
The LDS, always. Mm-hmm. I think it was predominant then.
Oh, yeah.
I think that changed about when Karen was born. There was a wreck here in Star Valley, and I had just delivered her, and I had 3 different beds in the old hospital over here. And it was a group of young people, and there was one girl and about 3 boys or 4. And the plane went down, and they weren't hurt. But I'll tell you, their parents was up here in this hick town to getting them kids out of here. And she'd been down walking the streets with her bare feet, this girl, you know. But their parents thought, oh, that's Star Valley. Maybe they weren't LDS. But I remember Dr. Worthen saying, we were 94% pure Mormon up here at that time.
How did you meet Dick? Uh-huh. How'd you meet him?
Well, I was voted from Smoot the Harvest Queen that first year of school. And I went with a fellow named Fred Bowles from Osmond. And we were sitting in the car, and Dick came up and looked through the window. And I must look pretty good. And that was the first encounter.
What was your first impression of him?
Well, pretty good, I guess. Because we hit it off, and finally made it to the altar.
How long after that were you married?
2 years.
Just 2 years.
Yeah, because I guess it was 2 years, or, you know, maybe that wasn't the first year. Anyway.
where were you married?
In the Logan Temple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you remember about your wedding day?
Well, oh boy. Mother and Dick's mother went with us. We went down, got our license in Logan. We went through the temple. And we stayed all night at a hotel there. And then Mother came home with us. And Dick's mother stayed down with Aunt Sabra, his aunt, for a week. And when we got home that next day, Dick was out on the header cutting grain. And I turned immediately into a cook, a bottle washer and a cook. And Aunt Bernice, his sister-in-law, came up the next morning. And Annie had been there from Kimmer. She's the clerk of court. And she brought a box of pears. I'd help my mom can peaches and that, you know. But I hadn't done it entirely by myself. And Bernice told me what to do. And it sounded real foreign to me. I'd never seen my mother put a dishpan in the oven full of pears or anything else and cook them. Mother must have had a canner or something. Anyway, I did it like Bernice said. And I never got any back on it, any feedback, whether it was, because Annie came in the next weekend and took them all home to Kemmer. And so, anyway, but that was my first deal, initiation into being a married wife.
Married woman. Did you have a wedding reception or anything?
Oh, yeah, just within the home. A lot of the family and a few of the town people. Oh, we got so many things and so many duplicates that Annie, when she came in, she went through it all. What I had two of, they gave to Carly. What I had three of, one, it went back to the store in exchange for something else. Because Carly got married in October, and we got married in the first day of September. And so that's the way they did that. And I didn't know any different. Me and Mother quilted one quilt, Aunt Lillian, and that's all I had, was that one quilt. Now they have about six quilts. And I hate blankets, so I was glad I didn't have a blanket. I did, though. I had a couple of them.
So when did you have your first baby? What was it like to be a new parent? What did you think?
Well, she looked darn good to me, but Dick said, she'll look better after a while. Little red-faced baby, you know. But she was a pretty baby.
Where was she born?
Over here in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Taysom was right there, Johnny on the spot, to help. And she's born the 3rd of October, 1943. So I guess we'd been married 13 months or so. Versus September and October. Anyway.
How did you feel about being a parent?
You know, I think I took it in my stride. I didn't worry about it. I don't remember worrying about it. She's such a sweet little thing. And I remember when it came to naming her, I wanted to name her Andrea or Annette, and they wouldn't have them. So out of desperation, I said, well, if you don't like any of them, I'll call her Melanie. And he said, well, that's a lot better than some of those other names. So that's how she got her name.
How many children did you have?
Six.
And what are their names in order?
Okay, Melanie and Jim and Irene, and Kevin, Karen, and Gary.
Where are they all now? Where
do
they live?
Jim and Kevin are in Logan area, and Gary and Melanie and Irene and Karen's here in Afton. So,
where did you live during your adult years?
Up here, still up to Smoot. By the foothills. Oh, that was a good place to live. I remember we went catching fish in the little stream that came down for the mountains with our hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we were pretty tight holders because they were slippery. Oh, dear.
What did you do for entertainment as a young married couple?
We just continued to go to dances.
Yeah.
I remember going down to Thane. We went to Dad's Hall once, you know. Wow. That's pretty bad. And I remember going to Freedom. And so that was it. We later in life we met with a group here in Fairview and had home evening. I remember that. But that was a lot later. They always used to kind of tease me because I loved my hometown so much, you know. And then coming to Fairview, I can remember the first sacrament meeting I went to. It seemed like they sang so quiet here. We hardly dared sing a word. But up to Smoot, they really bellowed it out. We had Mrs. Lancaster Retta for our leader, and she was wonderful. And we sang out, and I guess the song in seminary that I really loved was True to the Faith, and I loved that song.
What year did you and Dick build this house and move here?
1940. We moved up here in 48, right after my birthday, I guess. We had three little kids. Irene was about 6 months old.
What, what talents did you discover in yourself as you grew up?
Oh, brother. I don't have any. I talk too much. That's it. Oh. I like to write things up, you know. Did you read my Christmas tree deal?
Yeah,
oh, brother.
Sure did.
I like to do things like that. It seems like it just comes. I have to be in a special kind of mood.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened like that really good. And so I like to do that. I like to do lots of handwork, which is I should do more exercising. And I'm thinking now that I better get with it or I won't be able to walk at all. But so I'm trying harder.
What personal or family tragedies have you had in your life?
I guess just when Todd got leukemia. Mm-hmm. Jim, a little grandson. He would have been 2 the 29th of June, and he was diagnosed in March. I remember sitting in my desk over at Caribou when I was working for them, and Jim called me on the phone. That was horrible. It was really bad. And everybody was so good. Remember Dick and I taking the kids down to Salt Lake to see him. He had right curly hair, but he was all bruised, you know.
Yeah.
And Dixie, bless her heart, she at the foot of his bed, she'd put all his siblings' pictures so he wouldn't forget them. That was heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
Oh, there. It really was.
What's the greatest accomplishment do you think you've had in your life?
I was going to say getting along with Doug. Oh, sometimes these seconds are only for the birds. I always thought he was perfect, and I found out never. I wanted him to be, but I didn't want to be.
Well, so when did your first husband die? When was that?
It was in, let's see, oh, jeepers, it's in the spring. It was in May, about the 26th of May, 1919. I was 62 years old, so 62 and 24. Anyway, that's when he died, was in May. We had his funeral the 29th of May. I can't remember what year, but it was, can't remember, it's been that long
ago. It's been about 20 years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
About 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how long was it before you married Doug?
A year and a half.
A year and a half. You married Doug Barris.
Yeah. And we went on a mission. I wasn't ready for a mission. These kids are so ready, Carlene.
Yeah.
Oh, his grandson come here. And I'll tell you, his birthday's, I think, the 16th of March. He's having his farewell on the 25th. And he's ready. He has changed so much in a year. He couldn't wait to get on the four-wheeler or whatever and take off. Mm-hmm. He never even mentioned it. And he is ready. His sister went, and she turned out to be such a fantastic one that I know she schooled him really good.
Where is he going?
Yeah. The Philippines. As where Dick spent a year in the Philippines.
During the war.
Yeah. He's going to Baguio. I think it's north. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Hmm. But Dick was down in Lady there, so. Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah. Your life can go by in a, it's like the wind, and you don't notice it. It's like that poem, Who Has Seen the Wind?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just go by, and you think, I heard once that you regret the things you didn't do more than the things you did do. And I guess that's true, you know. I wish I'd been a better mom and more loving. I just said, march right down here, don't you look to left or right.
That's why your kids turned out so good.
Well.
They all did.
They all need a refresher course. Oh, dear.
How many hundred booties, pairs of booties,
oh,
and how many hundred pair sweaters and
oh, yeah,
have you knit and
oh,
crocheted?
I couldn't retell you.
How many doilies have you
yeah.
knit?
I have. I loved it. I guess it wasn't too good for my exercise. I got my fingers exercised. Twice I had to go get Dr. Perks give me a shot for bursitis because I couldn't use my hand. And so I've been watching it, you know. And I still have a sweater right in there. I hated to sew them together, Carlene. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to put all the stitches on at once, and it works better. But now I have to remember how many to take out under the armholes. And then put the yoke in. But I do it up to here. Then I do the sleeve. Then I leave a space here, put the sleeve in, the back, the front, the sleeve, the back, the sleeve, the front, and do the yoke. It's a pretty pattern. But I'm getting tired of doing that too, Gary. And then for the little boys, I did
cardigans.
Yeah. And I hated that because you do the front piece the same as you do the others, only it's all garter stitch. If it was a stockinette, it would lay out right, but it always ends up a little curl on the bottom.
Yeah.
And I hate that. So.
So as you look back on your life, what one thing have you had to work really hard at, and then you finally succeeded?
Reading a pattern. I remember my sister Sherma when her and Monty lived here. We were knitting a sweater, and it was the first. And it said, when you knit the next stitch, wrap it around your needle twice, mm-hmm. you know, and knit. And when you come back, you had to undo that. Then you had to cross them over like this. So you had four here and four there. So it made a cross.
Uh-huh.
And we read that over and over. And the next morning it fit into Pat. And it just went like clockwise. I think I did a lot of praying.
You must have been.
And once when Dick's mother used to make those round ones, you know,
yeah.
with the black in between each color. So Dion came up and said, Venna, I've forgotten how to do it. Up to Mother's when I was staying there. So she came up and I could do it, but it didn't look like the back, so I knew I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I worked on it, and one Sunday morning after she'd been there the night before, I got up and it just clicked. Put the black on first, then do the other. Because you would put the black on, then you'd take the next color and you knit down three, then turn around and go back up, put the next color and go down six, you know? And it looked like that. I've got one in there that's Todd's for his African. I didn't give it to him because I want to make some more of them.
Yeah.
They were beautiful. Just, and it was about this big around, like a spoke. And Dick's mother just took all her extra colors, so it looked like Joseph's coat of many colors. But I used some in colors that went together, like to match somebody's couch or something. One year, since I married Doug, I used to do all his kids a present. They were funny, dumb things, and I never did know how they took it. Well, when Irene's was about a senior, Aunt Virginia had taken, it looked like a corset, or anyway, it was shaped like this, then it went like this, and like that. So we put little garters here. It was lined with plastic. It had a little hole there to hang it on a, made with a thing that would fit on a nail, you know, when you used to make buttons or, and it was to keep your nylons in. So I made a bunch of them one year, and it was left over from Irene's reception dress.
Oh, yeah.
And it was dark green. I still got some. I wish I'd made one for me. And it's the most beautiful cloth, and I know it costs a lot. Anyway, it was so dark green, it was almost black. So I trimmed it in red, ruffled, and the little garters. I bought new garters.
Yeah.
And I put them on with red ribbon. But this around the top of your neck like this and on your legs was this ruffly red lace. And I debated long and hard whether to send Barry, who I figured was so straight-laced, some for his girls. But I finally did, but I never heard a word. So I don't know how they took it. I made bookmarks for them. Oh. I had a pattern of a scarf that went, it came out into a heart at the bottom, but it had an insertion where I could put this through there, so the two hearts was like this around their neck. And Kevin's kids wore them up here around their ears. Oh, and I made skunks. You know those skunks?
Yes, they're those cute. Skunks.
I was looking at them the other day. I had all the pictures out. And there's on my bed. And then I made pot holders, poinsettia pot holders. They weren't very safe, though, I didn't think. They were quite open. But there's a row of these pajama bags with the little face in.
Yeah.
You know. And those skunks. Those round pillows. Oh. And everything. I took a picture of them. And I can't remember.
Now, go back to your teen years and tell us about your trip to Salt Lake in the cattle truck.
Oh, yes. That was when I must have been a sophomore. I must have been. But it was a fruit truck. But it was like a truck. And I had the picture, but Melanie's taking it over to get it blowed up. And our teacher up there was Nettie Kingston. And I can't see who really everybody is. I took the picture, so I'm not there. But they were all standing up. The truck would have a solid piece of lumber. Then there was a hole so they could put their toes in there and stand up and hang over the half side of the truck. And I know Ada Mae's on there, my cousin Pearl and Leela. And I can't really tell who the rest of them are, but the Sybil Weaver would have been there, and Leela Maud. I don't know whether they were all on the truck at the time. And Nettie standing right down the side. And she wore her hair, it was really long in braids, and then she wrapped it around her head, you know. And her daughter was Venna, too. but she's older, and that's a year older. So she wasn't there, and she was our mutual teacher. So I must have been over 12 then. I must have been about 14. Mm-hmm. And we went down, and we stayed with some Clarks. They farmed us out in Logan first, where we were baptized for the dead. And then he loaded us up and took us on to Salt Lake to these Clarks people. We stayed in Logan. We were farmed out to people they must have known there. I remember getting up that first morning. We stayed there. And I walked into this lady's front room, and on her table, the first time I'd ever seen a peony, she had a big bouquet of peonies. Oh, they were beautiful. And it must have been July, you know. And so I just went over and put my hand under that peony, and all the blossoms fell out of my hand. I didn't know what to do. I was just sick. I just put my hand under. Anyway, and that's the first time I'd seen it. So when we got down to Clark's, we slept around there.
That was in Salt Lake, uh-huh.
Yeah. And she had a daughter that had never got married. And then she had a daughter that was married, and they were a nice couple. They had some little kids. And I don't know whether we slept out or in the house or where we slept, but here come Nettie the next morning, and she had this black, dark blanket wrapped around her, and her hair down. She looked just like maybe an Indian. So Melanie's getting them blowed up for me. Then I called, and so this couple that were so nice, can't even remember, but we knew a boy from down there that Hamie had been on a mission with his dad, and his name was Lambert, and he'd come up in the summer and spend a little time with Enid, their family. So we'd got to know, his name was Charlie Lambert. And so when I was looking through a book the other day, I had a little, you know, when they used to have those autograph books, you'd write a little message in it, like, when you get married and live by the sea, order your babies from Sears and Roebuck or some dumb thing like that. Anyway, so they took us up to Coconut Grove.
Coconut Grove.
In Salt Lake. That was a dance place. It was upstairs, as I remember. It wasn't on the floor. And us girls got to dance with boys we didn't ever know or see again. Young boys that thought we better go check them out. They look like hicks. But that was fun. It was. We came home feeling pretty good.
Good. Tell us about your religious testimony.
Well, I guess I've always believed in the church. And when I go back, I guess the first thing I should start with is my mother. Dad was on jury duty when it came time for my brother to be baptized. And it was in December, the 9th of December in 1931. And so the brethren, you know, from Smoot called and said, if you'll meet us up to the church, you can ride down with us to get him baptized. So my mother dressed up, and they walked to Smoot. Walked. It must have been a nice day. Anyway, he was baptized in the South Ward Church that we don't have anymore over there. They had a font in there. And Ellsworth Crosley baptized him. And just before L.A. got in, he baptized Ruth Moffat. That was my dad's, he liked this Mr. Moffat's daughter. And her name was Ruth. So when L.A. got in, Ellsworth called him Larne Moffat. So he had to do it again. And the next time, his toe came out. So he had to do it again. He got three. He got three douses. Or two. Anyhow. We always teased him about that. He's so wicked. I don't know whether he remembers that or not. But that was our baptismal deal. Now, what else did you say?
Right? No, you've been active in the church all your life.
Oh, yeah.
And and you served a mission? Where?
In the Chicago, Illinois mission.
You and Doug?
Yeah. I wasn't a very good missionary. I remember there was a couple, when we first got there and got our apartment, here come a couple, and they were at, it was Christmas month, you know, first part of December, and they were out gathering funds for, oh, what would it be? Well, for the poor or something for Christmas. So Doug Duck got in his wallet and handed $5. And then when they found out who we were, they didn't want anything to do with us. And we tried to meet with them. I remember at Christmas time I'd made a lot of goodies for those around in the apartment and delivered them. And I went to her door. And she didn't want us to come in or nothing. But the night before we were to get out of there and come home, here she come and invited us to come in and have, I guess, a bash with the scriptures. And Doug wouldn't go. I had gone the day before to her door alone, mind you. I shouldn't have done that. But it was outside. I just went to outside and I took her Book of Mormon. And I said to her, I think she was on the phone or something. She finally came to the door. They had those long glass doors. She finally came to the door, and I said, I want you to have a Book of Mormon. She won. I said, all right, when you get up there, you will remember that you rejected. I said that to her and left. And then she came around, wanted to, and he said, they couldn't.
Did you take her a goodie?
I did. I took her popcorn before that and everything. And they were good people. It wasn't Seventh Day Adventist. We taught somebody,
Jehovah's Witnesses?
No, not that. One more. Name another.
Southern Baptist? Mm-mm.
They're quite well known. I think they were implicated in redoing the Bible earlier when
Methodists or something.
I wish I could remember that. But anyhow.
Did you enjoy your mission?
Yes, it was very nice. I taught some little, the lady that lived up above us was Arabic.
Oh.
And I found a Book of Mormon written in Arabic, and I bought it for $2, and I took it to Isabel.
Mm-hmm.
And she had two sons, Hassan and Tony. Well, Tony, and I guess I put them all back. I had the pictures out here. Tony went back to Lebanon. That's where they came from. And her husband had died. And every time we'd come from the office, we worked for the office a long time. We did a little proselyting on the side. And every time we'd come from the office, she'd be sitting up on her veranda, Isabel. Mm-hmm. And Doug would look up and say, is supper ready? You know. And one day, here she came down, and she was knitting. And this was before Cash was born, you know. And she said, you like, you know, you talk different. I said, I like. So she made him a couple of pair of booties, the ones I make, those knitted ones I make.
Mm-hmm.
And so she taught me how to do them. And it's just here. I never had a written thing. Mm-hmm. When I get so long, she said, ooh, you're smart. That tickled me because I just had a little knitting. I'd knit, well, I guess I first learned to knit when Dick was in the service, because Maud and Dick's mother were knitting.
Where did you live when he was in the service?
I lived in Lelson's size house down here where the Johnsons live.
Oh.
That's where I stayed. And anyway, Maud and I and Dick's mother made a khaki-colored sweater to send to the kids in the service. I knit one sleeve. Maud knit the other in the back, and, you know. But I knit one up, so I had a little knowledge of knitting. So that's where I learned to knit, and it really caught on. I loved to knit, you know. But I changed things. Melanie's, Karen, Irene would say, Mom, you'll never be a good cook because you're always ad-libbing the recipe. That's why I don't cook very good. I don't like to cook.
You're a good cook.
Anyhow.
We done? Have you had enough?
If you have.